Hello, everyone. My name is Shun Saito. I'm a postdoc at MPA. So let's go back to massive galaxies. It's much more massive than the dwarf galaxies. This is based on the work published in the last few years. So basically, I'm going to talk about the Bose galaxies. So just in case you don't know what the Bose is, let me quickly introduce what the Bose is. So the Bose is basically the Bose Baryon Oscillation Spectroscopic Survey as a part of the Sloan Digital Survey 3, which is basically done. The basic great thing here is that it's a tremendous statistics. So we have basically 1 million galaxies over 10, 1 million massive galaxies over 10,000 square degrees. And in both, we have two distinct samples. One is LOSY, which is kind of extension of the LRGs in Sloan 2. And also we have CMAS, which I'm focusing on in this talk. So CMAS stands for the constant mass, which means that it is designed to detect the massive galaxies whose mass is more than 10 to 11.3. And we basically have million galaxies for the CMAS sample, and the redshift range from 0.43 to 0.7. But because we got a bit higher redshifts than the LRG or LOSY, indeed, we do have not red and non-dead galaxies. For example, if you look at the image in HST, most of it sort of found a star-forming disk for 25% of the sample. It's kind of interesting thing, even at the massive end. And of course, the most successful thing in both is the cosmological measurement in BAO and LSD. By focusing on 100 megaparsec scale, the clustering signal, we measure the BAO at the level of 1%, and focusing on the from 10 to 100 megaparsec anisotropic part, we can measure the RSD or the growth of large structure at the level of 7%. And the question is, of course, that because we focus on the large scale here, do we really need to worry about the small scale or the galaxy halo connections? And my answer should be yes, because this, in order to ensure the robustness of this analysis pipeline is extensively tested against the MOCs, which actually assumes some kind of galaxy halo connection. That's why this is very important. So let's ask, so even though some people here could say that massive galaxies are very simple enough to understand compared to dwarf galaxies, let's ask more specifically, which is that, do we even understand the galaxy halo connection at the level of at the statistical level of both? So that we have the tremendous statistics, so that accuracy and precision is quite high. And as I said, this is highly relevant to cosmology and galaxy evolution. So it's very important to know what is a concrete picture at the level of this precision for the both galaxies. And as most of you agreed, the stellar mass is the most important factor to connect the galaxies and the halos. Let's take a look at the stellar mass for the Bose galaxies, and let's study the completeness for the CMAS sample in more great detail. But before going to do that, let me list up a bunch of CMAS halo studies. I apologize if your work is not listed here, but I think pretty much it. And I have no time to explain everything, but so basically, there are a bunch of models using HOD, and they use a different statistic, sometimes WP, sometimes multiple, sometimes lensing. And sometimes they use a full sample, for example, Gen-Gen talk, they use a subsample, not the full CMAS sample. And also, I put the red colors for my papers because they all are black people, black letter people. Are successful, they're basically very happy. But here, in this talk, we try to argue that there's some issues in understanding the connection between CMAS galaxies and halos. And the basic different point here is that we use a better stellar mass function, a better stellar mass estimate using the deeper photometry. So let me explain what it is. So, as pointed out many times, the Sloan photometry is very shallow. So it's always better to go deeper photometry catalogs and then ask what is the completeness of the sample in terms of stellar mass in this case, and color also. So for this purpose, we use the so-called CoARS photometry, in which Sloan basically visit multiple times. Therefore, we have a deeper surface by two magnitude also in R-band, over 140 scale degrees in the SLAP 82. And the nice thing about SLAP 82 is that we have other wavelength data available. For example, we can combine with the near infrared bands in the UKIT. Then we are supposed to have more robust estimates by breaking degeneracy in dust and so on. So then what we found is that there's a systematic offset in the stellar mass estimate between our world and the original single visit photometry. And this is a difference as a function of redshift. And as you can see, there is a systematic offset at level of 0.1 to 0.0 dex. And more importantly, there is an offset in a redshift dependent way. And by the way, the catalog is available in this catalog, and it's really easy to remember. It's just massivegalaxies.com, so please take a look if you're interested. And so let's take a look at how CMOS samples are selected. Okay? So this is the basically color cut and luminosity cut to select the CMOS sample. So y-axis is the color, which is a combination of R, I, and G. And the x-axis is I-band magnitude. And from left to right, it's from go to low redshift to high redshift. And upper panel is the lower stellar mass object, 11.5. And the lower one is the more massive ones. Okay? And if the object within this shape, it is selected as a CMOS galaxy. And as you can see by eye, a lot of the object is not selected. This means that in terms of stellar mass, the CMOS sample is not complete at all. And if you look more closely, you can see that at the low redshift, 0 and 0.46, the selection is dominated by this cut. This means that the redshift, low redshift, the CMOS selection is dominated by color cut rather than luminosity cut, which means that we only have the red samples, red galaxies. But if you go towards the higher redshift, the selection is more dominated by the cut in perpendicular to the x-axis, which is the luminosity cut. So we just basically throw away the faint object. In this case, we have both red and blue galaxies even at high mass end. So this is the resultant stellar mass functions. So the left panel shows the stellar mass functions for all galaxies by comparing with the primary stellar mass functions. And thanks to the large area of the SLAP 82, which is 140 square degrees, we have a pretty good job at the very high mass end. But of course, the stellar mass function for the galaxies also become incomplete at around 11.3. And this is the story for all galaxies, and let's take a look at CMOS galaxies as a function of redshift. So that panel shows you the stellar mass functions for CMOS sample as a function of redshift. Again, these points are taken from the old galaxies, while these curves correspond to the redshift. The color-coded is corresponds to redshift for the CMOS sample. So if you look at, for example, the magenta line, which is 0 and 0.46, low redshift regions, because this is dominated by color cut, they actually drop out a lot of massive galaxies here. So it's really highly incomplete in terms of stellar mass at the high mass end. And also, if you go to high redshift, 0.7, for example, if you look at the orange one, it basically throw away the faint object. So that's why it becomes less object in here. And as a result, the most important thing here is that, as you can see, the peak has a redshift dependence. And this is not negligible at all. So this is the factor of 1.8 increase in the mean stellar mass. So this means that CMAS sample is not constant mass anymore, unfortunately. And we have to take into account the redshift dependent stellar mass completeness in some way. So in order to take into account this complicated stellar mass completeness, we chose the subhalo abundance matching because in this case, it's a bit simple to take into account that effect. So what we do is explained in this short explanation, illustrations. So we just take the multi-dark simulations, everybody simulations, and we first determine the intrinsic Stellamax functions, which should be abundance matched against the MOX, given the free parameters phi 0 and m 0, which is just the amplitude of the Stellamax functions and the turnaround scale. Then we do the one-to-one abundance match against the V-peak in the simulations, and then we introduce constant scatter, log normal constant scatter, to match to the observed Stellamax functions for all galaxies. Then, if we assume that the CMAS sample is just a random downsampling at a fixed Stellamax, we can easily incorporate the Stellamax incompleteness. Namely, at fixed mass, we just need to randomly downsample to get the right Stellamax function of the CMAS sample like this. So by doing this way, if there is no correlations beyond the Stellamax and the halo mass or V-peak, we can basically get the CMAS MOX by taking account of the Stellamax incompleteness. And we do the MCMC fit to simultaneously explain the Stellamax functions for STRIPE 82 for all galaxies and both CMAS projected correlation functions. So this is the result. Again, this is Stellamax functions, and the best fit curve is shown in the black curve, and the intrinsic one is a dotted curve. And just ignore the green ones. The red one is the best fit one. And at the level of chi-square, it's really a good fit, which means that we can simultaneously explain the Stellamax functions and the projected correlation functions for CMAS sample. And one thing I have to note here is that the scatter, as you can see here, it's really, really small. The best fitting value for the scatter is something like 0.1 dex at a fixed V-peak or fixed halo mass. And this value is basically consistent with the scatter we have in the observational observations. This means that the intrinsic scatter is basically consistent with zero, which could be surprising to you. So far, so good. And this is a comparison of HOD itself. So in our case, HOD is not a fitting parameter. HOD is just a derived quantity from the MOX. Therefore, we can compare the HOD result in the literature. So here, we compare the HOD as a function of redshift, low redshift, middle redshift, high redshift. And just ignore the cyan points and just look at the red points, which is our result. The circle one is central and the triangle is the satellites. And for the HOD, for example, in literature, they basically fix HOD over entire redshift range, and they first get this thin line. Okay, but of course, if you do that, the number density is just constant over redshift range, which is inconsistent with the redshift distribution of the CMAS galaxies. That's why they have to randomly downsample the galaxies to get the right DNDV, which is shown in these thick lines. So that's why we have to compare our data points with the thick lines. And as you can see, in the middle redshift range, where CMAS is mostly complete, we are in a very good agreement. However, for example, if we look at the high redshift, in the case of HOD, they have to throw away, for example, 90% of centrals. And in my opinion, it's a bit strange because at high redshift, the cut is limited to luminosity cut. So it's really hard to imagine that just doing the luminosity cut, just throwing away 90% of satellites is not realistic. Okay, so I would say that at this point, the HOD modeling and our modeling is similarly good, but I have to point out that the failure of our model, which is a problem. So far, I just talked about the entire CMAS sample, but if I look into the evolution of redshift of the clustering, we see some failures. So for example, if you just look at the measurement, surprisingly, the CMAS clustering has no evolutions. In the monopole, the data shows that if there is no evolution at the level of 5%, in the quadrupole, it's a level of 20%. So there's no evolution of CMAS clustering. However, as I said, there is a factor 1.8 increase in our Stellamax estimate in the CMAS sample. Therefore, it's natural to get strong evolutions in terms of mean halo mass in our sample. So that's why if you just predict the redshift evolutions of a clustering, it's highly inconsistent with the data. So this is one of our failure. And also, not just our mocks, all of the both mocks basically fail to reproduce the lensing signal. In this paper, we measure the galaxy-galaxy lensing signal in SWAP-AT2 and CFHC lens, and then compare with the bunch of mocks, which again, just designed to match to the number density over the projected correlation functions or galaxy clustering. This is the delta sigma, the function of R. This is the same plot, but normalized to the data. So as you can see, there is something like 20% offset. So it's a huge. And as you can see, the different lines just corresponds to different mocks. And now the mocks basically can explain the data, which is interesting. So we have to solve this problem. And there are so many possible reasons. And I here just categorized into three things. One is galaxy halo connections. We could miss assembly bias, or we could miss baryonic effect because we just use the dark matter only simulations, or we assume the scatter is constant, but it could be mass dependent. And also, it could be depend on omega matter, sigma, like cosmology, neutron mass, molecular gravity. And also, I should point out that as Sloan discussed on Monday, HSC result says that there's tons of missing light in outer radii, which introduce the bias result in the stellar mass estimation. So I don't have a lot of time, so let me focus maybe one thing. So it's really hard to say which one is which, the possible reason, but here I just try to get some sense by using a simple exercise. So here, just to get some sense of baryonic effect, we just select the constant number, CMAS-like constant number density in illustrious, not TNG, and then quantify the impact of the baryonic effect. So this is a delta sigma divided by delta sigma for full physics. So this means that if you go to larger y-axis, you got a suppression, more suppressions in delta sigma. And as you can see, if you turn on the full physics, we see some kind of 20% level effect in the one-halo regime. Okay. So as a summary, so basically we do not yet understand the full story of both CMAS galaxies. And the main reason is that CMAS is not stellar mass complete at all. This is my point. Okay, so let me first, finally point out one thing. So for the future prospects, I think in this conference, some people mentioned that future we have a great data set, and so that's why we can learn more about the galaxy halo connection. But I do think that selection effect is a huge issue, especially for the spectroscopic galaxy surveys. Because in future surveys, we generally observe only emission line galaxies. And emission galaxies is always selected by some kind of color cut to get an efficient survey. And because I'm working on Subaru PFS for target selections, let me tell you how complicated it is in a brief sense. So this is the color cut for the auto emitters in PFS. And this is a region we should be able to detect the auto emitters efficiently. And this is done in the Cosmos Mock Cutter exercise. Therefore, we know what the stellar mass is. Then if we just write down the stellar mass functions for all galaxies, and the blue one is the PFS target, and the red one is PFS detectable object. So it's basically impossible to get a stellar mass completed sample in the near future. So that's why we really need to think about the selection effect in terms of stellar mass on the other variable in the galaxy halo connection. Thank you very much.
Yao?
So I hope I didn't miss that one, but the 0.1 dex scatter is assuming the CMAT sample is a random subsample of the whole population.
So
right?
We basically introduced the global scatter for all galaxies and halos, and the CMAS is just a subsample. So
right, it's a random subsample, no
yeah,
selection.
At fixed stellar mass.
Right, so if CMAS itself is actually more clustered, then your random subsample reduce the clustering and then reduce that will actually reduce the scatter required in the abundance matching, because increasing scatter also reduces clustering. So the selection phase is probably going to degenerate with your scatter. So that was my first question, is how much that affect my change your scatter value. And the second one is also on the scatter, that is if you instead doing Vmax or Vpeak, but use Mpeak, is that going to affect your scatter value?
Okay, so let's see. So the fixed dramas, this is an sampling. So if you want to think about anything else, we need to introduce another correlations between, for example, galaxy color and something. And we didn't explore in detail.
I guess I'm just suggesting if you check, assuming it's associated with color, how much would the scatter value change?
So we tried a bit using the edge matching, but it's a bit tricky. I can tell you why later. And also for another question, because this is actually the green one, is the result when we use Mpeak. And as discussed in the Redico et al, Mpeak has a smaller satellite function than Vpeak, and that's why it doesn't fit to the CMS clustering. So yes, scatter could be different if you choose Mpeak, but the fit just becomes worse.
Would you walk us through the impact of some devices on galaxy
color? Yeah. Let me explain that a bit. So we didn't really explore what the effect could be, but so here, so just to get some sense, what is the necessary conditions for the assembly bias? So the exercise we did here is that just first fit HOD modeling to WP with usual four or five parameters, basically four parameters. And then just predict the delta sigma, which is basically way off, like this magenta one. And then we decompose into one halo term, two halo term. And if we artificially decrease the one halo central term for the delta sigma by a factor of 35%, we can basically get the right answer. So this, if you want to do this just by using the halo mass, this is 35% again. Sorry, it's 25% for delta sigma, which corresponds to 35% in halo. But the tricky thing is that we have to keep the number density constant. So if we just simply get the halo mass lower, you got a different number density. So therefore, it's really tricky to do the same thing. So for this kind of test, I think it's really important to have the large scale measurement to see the interplay between bias and halo mass and the silver bias.
So how large scale would you have to go?
How large scale should we go? So it's just two halo terms, so the impact.
Just saying the red line is a two halo term. Yeah. So beyond 10 megaparsecs.
It's better to go larger, of course, but.
You mentioned ELG, ELG selection function is going to need to be modeled for in relatively near term future. I was wondering whether you could comment on how complicated this is going to actually need to be in order to build a galaxy halo connection model that can account for the ELG selection function. In your view, if this is something that you've worked on or thought about, how bad are we looking at for that?
It's hard to answer, but in this case, we know what the stellar mass for the sample is because we use a Cosmos basically object. But in the reality, in the PF, it's really hard to measure the robust estimates for stellar mass for every PFS galaxies. So that's why it's even hard to just write this plot for the emission light galaxies. And of course, we could do by using the deep small region surveys just to write this. We are not sure yet, just the correlation between stellar mass and the VPX is enough, especially as a level of, future generation experiments. So I just pointed out that it's impossible to get the stellar mass limited sample in the future spectroscopic redshift survey.
Okay. Let's thank Sean again.